You can get 3 months of The Spectator for just £15, plus a free bottle of Paul Roger champagne if you go to spectator.co.uk/fizz24. This offer is UK only and subject to availability.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by Katie Bulls and Elizabeth Harpen. Now this morning the latest growth figures were out and they showed that the UK economy has contracted by 0.1%. Katie, you've written about this for Coffee House, our blog. Tell us more.
Yes, so this is not the news that Rachel Reeves would wanted. It's the second month in a row by which the economy has shrank and contracted rather than growing. And of course, one of Labour's big things is they are going for growth and talking about the fastest growth in the G7. They talk about that a little bit less these days, instead talking about an increase to living standards. But, you know, Rachel Reeves has come out and said it's disappointing that this has happened. However, you know, they're only early on into government. You can't really put it on the Labour government, and said that long term they're putting a strategy to build growth and almost stick with us, kid. Does that work? Mel Stride, the Shadow Chancellor, has been out saying this is what happens when you talk down the economy. And I think when you look at some of the potential factors in this, so business commentary on the figures, they're saying that what they think has led to potentially contraction in the month of October was expectation and doubt ahead of that budget. And that's been pointed at something which has caused a problem here. So I think that one of the issues for Rachel Reeves, and it's something that Treasury figures now, I think, do accept, be it privately, is they probably went a bit too heavy on the pessimism early on. And then also, by deciding to wait so long to have a budget, which was partly down to the OBR forecasts and so forth, it did just mean there was a long period where, for example, that investment summit, it wasn't quite at the right time because everyone wants to know what she was going to announce. Therefore, the question is, what's going to happen next month when it comes to this? I think the most worrying thing for Rachel Reeves is just, is there much to suggest that the growth trajectory is about to drastically change? You look at the budget, the growth forecasts were anemic. You look at what businesses are saying about the measures that she announced in the budget, which came after the month that we're talking about in figures. Lots of businesses saying they're going to put off creating job vacancies. They might hold back on investing. And it means there's quite a general negative picture. And I think that if I was thinking about which politician would I not want to be in 2025, and this is no offence to Rachel Reeves, much time for her, but in terms of her job, probably is Chancellor, because they have a very difficult spending review to do. You have little right now to suggest that growth is about to come. And then on top of that, you have Donald Trump returning. What's going to happen if he demands that everyone ups their defence budget to a certain percentage and she has to suddenly find that money? I think we are heading to a period of even more difficult choices.
And Isabel, of course, famously, most governments are elected or fall on the strength of the economy. What's your sense in Labour, perhaps, of how it's currently going? Obviously, I think within the first few months of a new government, they have a lot of leeway in terms of blaming the last administration for what went on. But for how much longer can that line continue to hold, especially now we've had the first budget and the consequences are seeping through to the British economy?
Yeah, this is the issue, is that you've already got businesses saying that they are making decisions, or not making, you know, decisions to hire more people on the basis of things that Rachel Reeves has done, as opposed to a lack of stability caused by the Conservatives, or, you know, black holes of one size or another or whatever. And this is the problem, is that even in today's ONS release, there's a lot of detail that cannot be pinned solely on the Conservatives by Labour. And that's, you know, that is an issue for Rachel Reeves, because really that sort of framing that she and Keir Starmer really went all out on in the first few weeks, months of this new Labour government was, you know, was really important for them, because they want to try to burn the Conservatives' reputation so that the next election voters still don't trust them on the economy. However, it was also, you know, a protective thing, wasn't it? Because you can say, and I've heard ministers say this phrase quite a lot over the past few weeks, we've only had 4 months. And, you know, actually, all of the problems we're dealing with are legacy problems. But when you start to get a narrative that is, I'd say, now quite well formed, that actually businesses are not responding to issues baked in by the Conservatives, but decisions taken since by Labour, that's when you move into a new phase of how you communicate what you're doing in government. And it's interesting, talking to some Conservative MPs recently, who obviously look at Rachel Reeves when they're in the chamber where she's sitting next to Keir Starmer. You know, they face her, her Labour colleagues are behind her, so they can't see her facial expressions. The Conservative MPs, and obviously, you know, there's a bias here and there's a, you know, a desire to see Labour struggling on the part of the Conservative MPs. But they say that Rachel Reeves's facial expressions have really changed over the past couple of months. So she has gone from, in their words, looking really happy and looking like she's sort of the woman of the moment to looking quite miserable. And that's possibly a choice on her part because chancellors rarely look happy. You know, chancellors have to have this slightly sort of detached, unapproachable persona. And you're not going to be a particularly good chancellor if you're everyone's best friend because you're not giving out sweets the whole time. You're generally saying people can't do this, they can't do that, they've got to cut 5%, you know, make your department more efficient, blah, blah. That's not something most people like hearing. So it might be a choice on her part. It might actually be that she is not particularly enjoying government at the moment, which would also be, as Katie alluded to, entirely understandable because it's not a particularly fun time for her at the moment. It's not going to be a particularly fun next few months as those ministers have to make those efficiency savings and realise that, you know, areas that she's branded as non-priority spending areas are still quite important, but are going to have to be cut. And that's going to be really tricky. And I was thinking about this today in relation to the two previous chancellors who you can sort of see Rachel Reeves mimicking. Obviously, Gordon Brown, you know, she uses a lot of the same phraseology as him. She adopted the idea of fiscal rules, which was something that Brown brought into government. But George Osborne, in the way that she mimicked his, you know, his framing of the economic situation in 2010. He reached a nadir in, you know, 2012, where he got booed at the Paralympics and had the omni-shambles budget and then rehabilitated himself. I would say that Reeves is heading to that point much quicker than Osborne was. At least he had 2 years. I wouldn't say he was looking happy for all of those 2 years, but I think he probably had two more enjoyable years before things got really tough and he had to do a big image overhaul. And I would hazard a guess, as Katie has suggested, that next year might be the year when that happens for the Chancellor.
I mean, I remember, of course, your point about a sort of haunted look on Rachel Reeves' face that when Nigel Lawson was appointed, Mrs. Thatcher told him to cut his hair because the markets wouldn't wear such a louche image. So maybe looking grim-faced is the lot of the modern 21st century Chancellor. I mean, Katie, Isabel talks about a lot of things there. I mean, one of which, of course, is the point about, you know, businesses specifically blaming Labour for what they're doing. And there's been a few businesses coming out this week talking about how they feel deceived by Labour in action, actually what they were going to be doing in office, and they felt they'd been bounced before the election into signing these agreements of support. Do you think perhaps, I mean, maybe it's too soon to tell, but you look back at the CBI conference a few weeks ago, you look at what's been said in the last few days, do you think maybe businesses is turning off the Labour Party, if not going to the Tories?
Well, I think going to the Tories is a different thing, but I think it is quite evident they're turning off Labour, and that's been pretty obvious for a while now. You look at, you know, various surveys on this, contrast the big Labour business conference earlier this year before the election, where they, you know, made a huge effort as a way to win back voter trust and also signal things to woo business. But business would always say that they could get a breakfast with Rachel Reeves very easily, but they weren't able to get too much in terms of what she was really planning to do. To that point, I don't think business would be like, we were completely misled. It was quite clear to anyone covering the election and to those trying to pin down Labour politicians on details that they've been quite tight in the sense that they have not offered exactly what they plan to do in all these areas. So perhaps there is a good faith issue here, but businesses had good faith and they feel that that has been gone back on. And I don't think that Rachel Reeves now is the talk of the FTSE 100 and business communities in the way that she was before the election. But there's also something about power, which is it looked as though Labour was going to win. Of course, businesses want to have conversations. Now she is in, that's when the hard work starts and people are going to start to feel as though that they're not getting what they want. I think that the CBI conference, for example, you're still getting these business groups trying to say, this is, you know, this is something that is fixable. You know, work with us, Chancellor and Prime Minister, to get us to a better landing space. And I think in terms of where Rachel Reeves goes next, part of the reason, to Isabel's point, the spending review is going to be so tricky is because what Rachel Reeves is saying is she cannot really tax anymore and she cannot really borrow anymore about tipping. If you tax business any further, what is going to happen if they already feel this pushed on it? And that does mean that without this magic growth, we are heading to a world of quite uncomfortable choices. I think that, you know, where do we think she goes if she does need to have more money than what she has currently brought in? Mm. It's not impossible she could be tempted to go back for more tax rises, despite what she says. I think at that point, that's when business would really go over the edge on Labour.
Okay, Isabel, I'm struck by something you said, which is about actually Rachel Reeves reaching the George Osborne Paralympics nadir of popularity 2 years quicker than he reached it. I wonder why that is. I mean, talking to different MPs, you've written obviously extensively about sort of why we get the politicians we do. I wonder, is it perhaps a sense of politics having been sped up in the WhatsApp age, or is it simply the sort of cumulative thing whereby after 15 years of anemic growth, frankly, the public's patience is willing to snap much faster than it was at the beginning of the 2010s?
I mean, I think you've answered that question yourself, James.
It was a long question.
That was, I can't really add. No, I'm not criticising it at all. I can't add to that analysis other than to say that I think Starmer did put his finger on it a bit in one of his early speeches. And I can't quite remember which one it was, whether it was his one of his party conference speech or whether it was another one earlier in the autumn, where he talked about this particular time in government being harder than the Conservatives coming in 2010 and Labour coming in 1997, because all of the circumstances were against them. So, you know, you don't have the economic growth, you don't have public trust, you know, you don't have the NHS in a good position, public services are in a bad way. All of these things all coming at once probably makes it much more intense. I think there is some frustration also within Labour. I wouldn't say Rachel Reeves has the court that George Osborne managed to cultivate, although he was much better at that later on. So perhaps she's going to do more of that, I don't know, in the coming months, given everything's moving very fast. But those who are Rachel Reeves fans will say, well, look, she's suffering partly because she's the bad cop. She's doing all the bad cop stuff. She needs good cop, or Labour needs good cop, Keir, to kind of balance this out. And he's the one who's actually struggling to articulate a vision, having relaunched speeches where he announces new pieces of architecture for his weird mission house that he's building with his pillars and his milestones and all that sort of thing. And no one really knows what he wants to do or how he's going to do it, other than he's setting up another committee. And that's one of the reasons why things might be more intensely bad for Reeves. But it is, you know, it is a really difficult situation on top of all the other things that you listed.
And I think there's one other difference too, which is George Osborne did warn about some of the decisions he was going to take during the election. Mm. Rachel Reeves didn't. And for every time they talk about, oh, Rachel Reeves is learning from the Osborne Cameron book in terms of blaming the opposition, the government that she's been in for the inheritance, David Cameron and George Osborne were quite clear ahead of the election, during the election, that they felt as though they needed to deal with the deficit, that there were going to be difficult decisions to make. While they say business figures probably should have had their wits about them, in the sense they weren't getting certain assurances, that's because I think that's just common sense if you are big business. But Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer would not go into the details of what they plan to do. And they were generally saying, and Rachel Reeves said this, that She did not see that there would need to be more tax rises than what was currently there. And yes, they had the triple lock on the three big ones, and they've stuck to that, unless you debate what National Insurance Employer Account says. But they didn't go into all of this. And I remember Jonathan Ashworth giving a press conference and about how awful the Tories were on the economy during the election. I said, you know, can you rule out now you're just going to come and have a doctor's mandate? And so you have to do all these things. And they just, you know, fudged it. That just means, I think, the public haven't been brought on the journey. And there is a bit of a knee-jerk, sharp turn to then say we have to do all these things. And it means you don't have as much public buy-in as you would have done if you perhaps you'd been a bit more honest on some of these things early on. Now, the counter is, would you have been elected? But there is the big difference, in my view, between what George Osborne did and what Rachel Reeves is doing.
And finally, this week, political spouses have been in the news. There's been a lot of attention focusing on Labour's relations with their partners in terms of who they're working for, if they're working for the party, if they're MPs themselves. I think perhaps one of the more famous examples recently has been Streeting's partner is now the party's head of communications and policy. Isabel, tell us through the issue about political spouses and whether you think perhaps there's more people, partners working in politics now than there ever have been before.
Well, yes. I mean, look, I have a slightly... I have to confess an interest in this because I may be potentially married to somebody who I met in Westminster, possibly. And my view is that it's sort of inevitable because you're all working quite long hours. You're all interested in the same stuff and you're all quite weird. And so the pool of people outside who want to spend time with you is probably quite small. And the pool of people who you find interesting is quite small too. But in seriousness, I was fascinated by your piece, James, and you were very modest about it, but your piece about how the role of political spouse has changed was really interesting because it's not the kind of, you know, supporting and quite often supporting wife role or the sort of Dennis Thatcher role of somebody who turns up and smiles and stays quiet, but does an awful lot behind the scenes. It's two people who are both forging their own, you know, powerful careers, busy careers as, you know, one's an advisor, one's an MP, both are MPs, both are advisors. And I suppose to a certain extent, it reflects the fact that women's lives have changed hugely and that actually, you know, they are not necessarily going to be at home being a supporting partner. If anything, you know, they're going to have their husband at home being a supporting partner or they're both going to be in Westminster. And, you know, I think that's really fascinating. But it's something that when you talk to MPs about their lives, quite a lot of them say that the only reason they were able to keep their marriage together was because they were both in Westminster. And whether that's, you know, I'd say the more traditional Tory MP setup of male MP employs his wife in his office and she's literally the only person who's going to answer his requests at like 10 p.m. on a Friday to deal with some constituency correspondence, because hopefully any other sane caseworker would tell the MP to shove off. Whether it's that, and, you know, a lot of MPs who I talked to for my book said that they had their spouses in their office because it meant their spouse could see them. And I think the spouse's view was so they could keep an eye on them as well. But, you know, it is an all-consuming job, whether you're, particularly if you're an advisor, but if you're an MP as well. And you have to find a way of seeing your family at some point. And if that means it's, you know, in SW1 with your children potentially in the Commons nursery, then, you know, that's the way to do it.
Absolutely right. Thank you very much, Isabel. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffee Hour Shots.